From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, September 10th, 2026. The nonprofit Preble Street has opened a new 24/7 shelter for teenagers experiencing homelessness in Portland. It's the only youth shelter in southern Maine and one of three licensed shelters for teens operating around the state. The latest data available from the Maine Education Department identified more than 3,700 students as being homeless during the 2024-2025 school year. Preble Street Executive Director Mark Swan says together the three shelters serve a few hundred teenagers each year.
The three actual shelters are serving, you know, literally kids who are out of the, not just out of the home and homeless, but also on their own, usually out of school systems.
But Swan says when the definition is broadened, there are more kids who lack a permanent residence or stable housing. The new Portland shelter called Joe's Place has 28 beds. It connects teens to health and mental health care, substance use treatment, and permanent housing resources. The town of Brunswick says an ongoing bloom of toxic phytoplankton in Casco Bay is harming and killing softshell clams in the area. Brunswick's coastal resource officer is observing signs of stress in clams in the coastal mudflats and is asking shellfish harvesters to avoid impacted areas. The phytoplankton bloom is not harmful to humans, but can affect feeding and respiration in fish and other marine organisms. State regulators heard testimony today on a proposal to require in-person inspections of some Maine care providers. As Kevin Miller reports, the proposal comes at a time when Maine's Medicaid program is facing scrutiny from the Trump administration.
This summer, the conservative political group Lead Maine submitted thousands of petition signatures to force rulemaking at the Maine Department of Health and Human Services. The group wants DHHS to conduct in-person and on-site inspections of Maine care provider businesses or service locations. A second proposed rule would require DHHS to suspend payments to providers while the department reviews potential improper billing. State Representative Laurel Libby is an Auburn Republican and Lead Maine's executive director.
When DHHS has identified improper billing, Maine taxpayers should not bear all of the financial risk while the department sorts it out. You have to plug the hole in the boat before you start bailing it out.
Republican state lawmakers have repeatedly accused the Mills administration of failing to adequately root out waste and potential fraud in Maine care. And top Trump administration officials have alleged that Maine's program is rife with fraud, but have yet to provide evidence of widespread issues. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Clergy members from churches around Bangor are asking a Newport landlord to reconsider renting a space to the federal government for a possible ICE facility. Reverend Jarrett Kerbel of John's Episcopal Church was among a dozen or so activists who delivered a letter to the Bangor office of Charles Cox today.
We set out to do what we decided to do, which is a very polite delivery of a letter, asking for a meeting concerning the property in Newport where ICE will be renting space.
The Trump administration has not confirmed reported plans for a new facility in the area, but Kerbel and others say they're concerned that a federal immigration office in eastern Maine would stoke more fear in the community and lead to unwarranted arrests. Cox did not respond to a request for comment. It's been just over a year since the passage of a Republican-backed reconciliation bill that made deep cuts to federal funding for food assistance through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP. According to the Nonpartisan Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, more than 18,000 Mainers lost eligibility, including about 5,000 children. Food insecurity experts say new requirements have made it harder to apply for aid, and as Michael Livingston reports, some individuals and families are now going without critical grocery money.
Sitting at her kitchen table in Buckfield, Casey McBlace is going over her bills for the month. All around her home are colorful drawings and family photos.
Yeah, my house has really been overrun by my children.
McBlace is a single mom of two kids, and for the past few years, she's relied on federal assistance to help cover food expenses. McBlace says she works as many hours as she can for the Maine Parent Federation, but she says finding affordable childcare has been difficult. In addition, her 8-year-old son has multiple neurodevelopmental disabilities that require regular appointments with specialists. After becoming a single-income household in 2023, she says SNAP was her family's lifeline.
I knew that despite everything else that was happening, all the craziness in my life that, you know, at least I could count on that.
But that assurance is no longer there. McBlaise says when she tried to renew her food assistance benefits for this year, she found her monthly allowance was nearly cut in half to about $300. In July, her balance went down again by another $50. But McBlaise says she hasn't been able to appeal or get much of any information from federal agencies. Since January, McBlaise has had many days like today, poring over the monthly expenses, trying to figure out how to make ends meet.
It's just sort of crunching the numbers, doing even more budgeting as much as anybody can, and, you know, hoping for the best.
What I see from a lot of people is it just feels like there's no way to catch a break.
Heather Arvidson is the program director of the Midcoast Hunger Prevention Program, an organization that helps people fill out SNAP applications. She says not only did the Big Beautiful Bill cut nearly $300 billion from federal food assistance programs over the next 10 years, it also tightened work requirements and added steps to prove eligibility.
These are folks that, like, just like all of us, don't have unlimited time to spend waiting on hold to try to get through to DHHS.
The bill also eliminates critical work exemptions for veterans, legal immigrants, and other vulnerable populations. And Arvidson says changes at the federal level have also increased cost sharing for states. At the Curtis Memorial Library in Brunswick, Beatrice Furbish browses the shelves after being dropped off by a friend. She's 82 and uses a walker to move up and down the aisles.
I have a crippling arthritis and my back is destroyed. My hip is bone on bone, and as you can see, I don't get around very well.
Furbish only receives $24 on her EBT card per month to help pay for food. Her condition requires a low-sodium diet with lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, and she likes going to the Brunswick Farmers Market for her favorite meals.
They make a special quiche for me so that I can get my protein and vegetable in it.
Maine's Harvest Bucks program gives SNAP recipients bonus money to shop at local farmers markets when they use their EBT cards. In previous years, the Harvest Bucks program matched SNAP benefits dollar for dollar. But Jimmy DiBiase, executive director of the Maine Federation of Farmers Markets, said the federal grant that finances the program never renewed for 2026.
It's a competitive grant to begin with, so we don't even know if we would get it when we apply, but there wasn't even a grant to apply for.
To conserve resources while funding remains uncertain, the Harvest Bucks program was reduced. It now offers 50 cents per dollar spent in SNAP funds. That means less money for Furbish and others who rely on Harvest Bucks to purchase fresh, local food.
I'm not getting what I should have. I cut corners everywhere, and cutting corners to me is, okay, I'll eat the Campbell's soup with salt in it.
Daniel Schechtman of Full Plates, Full Potential says stories like the McBlaise family and Furbish are becoming more common. And while state lawmakers did pass measures to help fortify food assistance programs in Maine this year, he says it can't replace what's been lost from federal programs.
We're really urging our local, our state, even our federal delegation, all our representatives, to do what they can to reverse these cuts and to ensure that these critical programs like SNAP are well-funded and protected.
Meanwhile, Schechtman says Mainers can help their neighbors by directly donating to local food banks and hunger prevention programs. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Michael Livingston.
And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse, our regular analysis of state politics and government. I'm joined by Maine Public Statehouse correspondent Kevin Miller and chief political correspondent Steve Missler, who are here to provide an update on the governor's race. Kevin, Governor Janet Mills is termed out, so this is an open seat, but it seems like the race for governor has received less attention this year than during past elections. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. The governor's race has been entirely overshadowed by the high-profile battle for Maine's U.S. Senate seat. But even though control of the Senate could hinge on what happens here in Maine, I would argue that the outcome of the governor's race will likely have a much bigger impact on Mainers. And that's just because policy decisions that come out of Augusta typically affect everyday life here much more than what happens in Congress.
So what's the latest on the three-person race for governor?
Yeah, well, we're starting to see the candidates ramp up their campaigns, and there are three of them, as you mentioned, a Democrat, Hannah Pingree, Republican Bobby Charles, and then Independent Rick Bennett. I suspect that many Mainers feel like they're already being bombarded by political ads, but most of those have been about the Senate race. And Hannah Pingree, she was the first gubernatorial candidate to hit the airwaves, and that was just earlier this week.
As governor, I'll take on the tough fights to bring down costs for you. Tax out-of-state homeowners to reduce property taxes for Mainers. And create a public insurance option to lower premiums.
Bobby Charles, he had his first town hall event in Brewer last week. He's not advertising on TV yet, at least that I'm aware of, but he won the GOP primary largely by just blanketing social media with digital ads and then a seemingly nonstop posts on social media. And he seems to be continuing that strategy for the general election.
Maine's already on the wrong track. Mainers can't afford Minnie Mills, Hannah Pingree. It's time for a change. Not a more progressive Mills.
And then finally, Rick Bennett is also popping up around the state. He's had a few town halls and these meet and greet events, but they seem to be smaller gatherings at this point.
So, Steve, do you have a sense of how things are shaping up at this point?
Yeah, well, there hasn't been a very much public polling of the race, Ari, but the surveys we have seen suggest that Hannah Pingree is very much in the driver's seat. She's had a double-digit lead over Charles, and Rick Bennett is even farther behind in polling in the single digits. But to circle back to your earlier point about the race getting eclipsed by the Senate contest, I think you could make the case that Pingree benefited from that dynamic during the primary, but it could be problematic if it continues to happen. And that's because she needs the attention and support of independent voters who might be tempted by Bennett's candidacy. And this is a three-way race that, unlike the primary, won't be decided by ranked choice voting. And Pingree seems pretty aware of the dangers that they may lie ahead.
I'm running in a complicated three-way race. We had ranked choice voting in the primary, which was amazing, but we don't have it for the general election. I am now running in a three-way race to defeat two Republicans, Rick Bennett and Bobby Charles.
And that was her speaking at a Labor Day event earlier this week. Of course, Bennett is running as an independent, but Pingree and the Democrats are trying to make sure voters know that he was a lifelong Republican up until launching his campaign for governor.
And Hannah Pingree, of course, isn't new to Maine politics, but Bobby Charles is something of a political newcomer. So, Steve, how are Pingree and Charles presenting themselves, and then how are they being portrayed by their opponents?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because Charles is a political newcomer in the sense that he's never run for office, but he's very much a political animal. You know, he briefly served in the Reagan administration and was later an assistant secretary of state during George W. Bush's presidency. After that, he ran a D.C. lobbying firm, and he's a pretty slick talker. He's basically trying to portray Pingree as Janet Mills 2.0, as you heard in that earlier clip. And he's also trying to tack to the center a bit after running a very Trumpy primary campaign. Pingree, meanwhile, is trying to frame Charles as a Trump-loving MAGA man who will readily comply with the president's various policy whims. And she's also taking some steps to put a little distance between herself and Governor Janet Mills, despite working in her administration. And I don't think that's because the governor is deeply unpopular or anything, but more because Pingree is trying to avoid the status quo label. You know, this is a very restive electorate, and such a label could be a drag on her campaign. And then Bennett is really taking this well-worn path of other independent candidates, which is to blame the two major political parties for various policy failures, political divisiveness. And the idea is to position himself as above the relentless partisan fray that exhausts and angers a lot of voters. Meanwhile, his opponents are trying to degrade that position by labeling him as a partisan cloaked as an independent. You know, Charles has described him as a Democrat, and Pingree, as you just heard, describes him as a Republican.
And Kevin, how is Rick Bennett factoring in here? He's been around Augusta for many years and is fairly well known in some political circles. So is his campaign breaking through?
Yeah, it's tough to say because, as Steve mentioned, there hasn't been a lot of detailed polling yet. And while polling isn't always accurate, it does at least indicate whether voters have heard of a candidate. As you said, Rick has been around for many years. He was first elected to the legislature in the 1990s. He's a past Senate president. He was chairman of the Maine Republican Party during President Trump's first term and during Governor LePage's time in office, for part of it at least. And he was a Republican for all that time. But as Steve said, you know, he's running as an independent because his more moderate brand of politics that just isn't where Donald Trump's Republican Party is these days.
And do the Charles and Pingree campaigns regard him as a threat?
Well, I'd say they have at times. You know, the main Democratic Party created a website earlier this year, basically pointing to his decades as a Republican. They don't seem to be spending as much time attacking him these days, but that would obviously change if he started to gain some traction. And I think the debates starting next month will really be key for Rick because, you know, as Steve and I have seen many, many times around Augusta, you know, he can be a very forceful speaker and is quite knowledgeable about policy issues.
And that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. You can hear more about the Maine governor's race over at mainepublic.org/pulse. And that's today's Maine news. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, the lasting impacts of 9/11. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.